Welcome back to Martins and More. My name's Mari Rutsch.
And I'm Spoon Phillips.
And I think it's time we talk about open tunings, or as Spoon would like to call it,
open spoonings. Wah, 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 wah.
And then before the show's over, I'd like to talk about alternate tunings. And I don't think we want to talk about alternate spooning, so why don't we do the first half and not the second half?
Fair enough. I'm certainly open for anything.
Very good. I want to say thank you very much to everybody watching. This episode's brought to you by our Patreon members. Join our growing community and enjoy early access to every episode, backstage content, exclusive videos, and more. We appreciate you.
I would like to begin by quoting my hero Carl Sagan, who said, it's very good to have an open mind, but not so open that your brains fall out.
Makes me rethink some of my decisions. Not going to say anything after that? That's going to leave it there? Okay.
No, that was it. That was it. Well, let me ask you before we get into this. Do you use open tunings and as opposed to alternate tunings? And why and when did you start doing that?
I was going to flip that question back at you a slightly different way, but I'll answer yours. I do. In the last 2 years, I bet you I've actually experimented more with that than I have ever before. Probably the very first time I've ever really done it, introduction to what it would be called in open tuning, open E, I'm a little embarrassed to say it was probably the early 90s. The Black Crowes, She Talks to Angels, was the first song that I combination understood. It was open E and tried to learn it. Like, I actually took my guitar, tuned it up that way, and tried to learn that kind of song. That was probably the first time that I took the knowledge of it and, you know, applied it and tried to do it. Not that successfully. I never learned it proper, but I know now, obviously, going far past 1990, 1991, a lot of the music I listen to, let me answer that two different ways. A lot of the music I'm listening to and have been listening to for the longest time, I now know some of that was open tuning, but there were some instances as recent as this year or late 2023 where I finally saw the right video and the right angle on a YouTube concert and recognize, oh, that's open tuning as well. So it certainly deserves its own conversation, and we'll touch on a lot of different things as the show goes on. But that was probably my first. And to answer, I do a little bit of it, but not a whole lot. I know you do, but can I ask you before I forget that part of it, what was your first introduction? Like, what was the first open tuning you played with?
Well, first of all, let me mark that song off the list of the songs I was going to talk about. But when I was a kid, my brother came home with, I think he got it at a secondhand store, the David Crosby songbook. And I was just barely playing guitar at this time. But he knew that I liked David Crosby and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And when I say barely playing at this time, I mainly used it to cut it up and use the pictures and put them on the wall, but the various photographs. But no, I did try to learn some songs. And also, this was my introduction to tabula trail. I didn't, you know, a lot of people don't realize tab's been around forever. And so we're going back into the early 70s when I got this thing. And it has tab. It has the full sheet music, but it also had a very, very detailed tablature that went along with it. So I tried to make the chord shapes. It also, you know, it also had the chord shape boxes. And I tried to make the chord shapes, and the songs I was trying to play sounded horrible. It sounded like when you make up purposely make up a terrible sounding, chord voicing that sounds like a train wreck. Because I didn't realize those songs were in alternate tunings. And it took me a while to realize up at the top when it said, you know, the D, G, A, whatever, you know, that was how you were supposed to tune the guitar. So that's when I first discovered the concept of it. But really, it was many years later before I realized just how many popular songs and artists that I, followed actually used open tunings, which I never even occurred to me. And with the exception of Little Martha, that was probably the first first time it was obvious when I saw somebody tune their guitar and play Little Martha.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's funny. You bring that story up about Crosby's songbook, and I think I've said this before, at least on one conversation. I remember my first introduction to reading chords listed on a lead sheet or a sheet music, and where now, you know, in my adult life, I know that when it says D/A, that's a D chord with A in the bass, and I know a lot of you guys listening know that too. Back then, I thought it was D or A, which, you know, you can choose which one you want to play. So, like, that didn't sound right at all. Why the hell would, why would they pick those two, and why would you be able to, you know, whichever one you want? So if anybody else out there either has or is currently looking at that and thinking that's what it means, I was foolish about it first. And I was so psyched to find out how, what it really means, you know.
Personally, I find that hilarious. So I'm glad to know that. No, I didn't. I thought it was the opposite. I thought it was use your pinky, because you see how people will do that sometimes, will add a note. Like, I just remember the A, which you first learn with three fingers. Then basically the open chord of A, how other people play it with the pinky on the fifth fret. And I thought that probably referred to something like that. So I think I was a little closer to the reality of it, but I was picturing it being about the treble. And also, I didn't know whether it was the D chord with A or the A chord with D. Same sort of thing. So you just experiment. I'm going to look at something here real quick because I just... I don't know why I didn't learn this before, but I found out that if I go to YouTube and I put on, let's say, one of their videos of a coral reef and turn the sound off and just have it shrunk down in the corner, it keeps my screensaver from coming on my computer. And I don't know why I never understood that or never figured that out before, but... That's what we've got to do right now, because I have to use my monitor as a light, since we're doing video, for people to actually have enough light to see me.
Ah.
And so I'm going to do this in 1 second. Okay, here. Now I have some nice little fish down in the corner, like a nice little aquarium, and it'll keep this, because I use a television as my monitor, and the thing will just keep shutting off on me. So...
Speaking of aquariums, we're not fishing for more Patreons, but if we could get one light for Spoon, or teach him how to go into the settings on the computer and make the screensaver start later, that's another way to do it. But that's not my business. That your studio's
yeah,
your studio.
Yeah, no, it isn't the screen. It's the television that's the issue, not the computer. So I use a big television for my, you know, monitor, which is giving me what's most of the light on my face. For those who are listening to this as a podcast, you may not know that we have people who get to see this as a video, if they are in fact members. So think about it, consider it. The possibilities are endless. As are the possibilities of tuning a guitar are endless. You know, no matter how many strings you're using on a guitar, you can change the tunings and come up with all kinds of really cool things. My friend Chris Rail, who had a band called Church of Betty for many years in New York City and other bands, came back from Europe with a Portuguese guitar. And he had no idea what it was. He just thought it was cool. And... had no idea what the proper tunings were. So I sent him an email explaining about the Portuguese guitar and how you tune it. And he said, thanks, but I don't care about that. I'm making up my own tunings. And this is a guy who knows how to play the sitar. So I trust his abilities to experiment and come up with interesting things. But anyway, I'm sure there's lots of people listening to this podcast that on their own, even without knowing that much about alternate tunings, may in fact have just experimented on their own when they were kids. The moment you learn how to tune the guitar so you're playing a open chord without having to finger anything is the moment you can suddenly feel like you can make music that sounds pretty without you know, having to know a lot about the fretboard. And there's an awful lot of popular songs in rock and roll and blues that do exactly that.
Let me circle back a moment. You mentioned Portuguese guitar. I wonder how well you and I know each other and if we could finish our sentences. If I tell you that we should count backwards from three and name the guitar player that you think of immediately when you say that, it would be 3, 2, 1, Steve Howe.
Lawrence Juber.
Ooh, I didn't know that. Really? Wow.
But, well, maybe not. He doesn't tend to use open tunings. He uses alternate tunings. But, so what are you thinking about, Steve Howe? What Steve Howe song are you thinking about that is in an open tuning?
Well, correct or incorrect, when I heard you say Portuguese guitar open tuning, I think it's the...
I'm sorry, I thought you meant open tunings.
Oh, well, let's go backwards to that. All right, backtrack. 3, 2, 1,
Steve Howe.
Now, I can't be that kind of person and be really, the trickery is off the charts. We just tried that and failed 2 minutes ago. But what I wanted to ask Spoon was, when you think of Portuguese guitar open tuning, don't you immediately think of that Yes song, Seen All Good People? That's what I think of.
That's funny you shouldn't mention that. Maybe if you'd asked me that 25 years ago, I would have said yes, but I haven't heard that song in a long, long time. Though I did discover, a Yes anniversary, reunion gig someplace on YouTube that was really super enjoyable, which then got me into a deep rabbit hole of watching live Yes videos. But that was like in the middle of the pandemic. So that's interesting. Like I said, that's a very good point. I forget about the amount of open tunings and alternate tuning songs out there. So here's one. When I mentioned that, doesn't matter how many strings you have on your guitar, that you can do open tunings and alternate tunings. Who can you think of out there among the rock elite who was famous for not always playing with six strings on his guitar for the purposes of open tunings?
I'm going to say Keith Richards, but can I actually admit something?
Hmm.
I didn't know that was a fact until about a year ago.
No kidding. Yeah, he would often leave off the, always has guitar, at least one guitar on stage that doesn't have a low E string on it. And so that he's got an A at the bottom, his bass note's an A, or the A string anyway, which he may tune down to G. I'm not exactly sure. Off the top of my head, I can't remember which tunes, but I'm pretty sure Brown Sugar's one of them, and maybe Honky Tonk Women, or maybe one each of those, or both of them, or one of them, I forget now. I'm sure we're going to get scalded by our listeners who remember all that stuff inside and out. But yeah, he basically, plays bars and then, does hammer-ons and pull-offs all around on the bars, but it's primarily playing bars, bar chords, not in bars. And also Jackson Browne. All the time I grew up playing Jackson Browne nonstop, going to see him in concert and all that stuff. I didn't realize that he was using open tunings, as often as he does. And you reminded me of that when you do some of his tunes, like You Love the Thunder. And what else does he do that with that you can think of?
I know he's good for that in Call It Alone. Running on Empty is open A, which I would never pick apart that guitar part. And frankly, we'll get into this in a minute, but think, why does it have to be? But I saw an old 1977-ish Saturday Night Live clip of them playing, and he's clearly playing chord, and then like playing the A without touching the strings. But it's Running on Empty. Well, You Love the Thunder is open E, if I remember correctly. Something Fine was my introduction to taking the A string and dropping it down to G. And I saw that tablature in a guitar store 20 years ago, and I thought, oh! Now it makes perfect sense, because you try to play that song without doing that, it's very, very... Oh, impossible is the wrong word, talking about people like Lawrence Juber, but that's an alternated version of the regular, six strings with one different... I'm sure there are more. I think he's got a few that might be open E flat, but I don't think of him as a, somebody like Steve Howe from Yes. I don't think of him as an El McMean, or I'll spend all these names early. I don't want to get too far down the show, but I don't necessarily hear his music on the recordings and immediately say, aha, that's something you really can't do in standard tuning, so I see why. And it reminded me to bring that up before we get too far. I want to ask you the thought process. Do you go to open tunings? Well, why do you would be one of my questions later. But he's got some. I'm sure he has more than I would even say I could.
Well, I knew I just have known you to do that, to play his songs with those open tunings. Something Fine is, of course, was always that's been a favorite song since I was too young to relate to it, and I used to wish I was old enough to relate to it. And even though, of course, he was barely out of his teens the time he wrote it, I wasn't until I was in college and I saw a guy at an open mic do it and showed me what he was doing and, dropping the A down to G, which then gives you it changes the harmonics and makes a very harmony oriented tune, which can be very important when you're performing by yourself. As far as me personally, I was playing around with alternate tunings because of that David Crosby book. By the time I was really playing the guitar in college, in the dorms and stuff, I started doing Neil Young songs. So he does a variety of songs in double drop D, where you just take the two D E's down. And for people who are not familiar with it, we should have said this early on, people not familiar with the term open tunings, like open D, open E, is you're basically changing the strings so that it makes a major chord or a minor chord. And so exactly what you're saying. So when he's playing Running Gun Empty, he hits that A. Those are all open strings, which give you a very big, powerful sound. But I'm definitely going to look up that video. I never saw them on Saturday Night Live, so that's really cool. I'll have to seek that out. Because that was either the Running on Empty tour or the one right after it. So it was still Lindley and Craig Durgy and Kortchmer and all that, those guys. Do you remember?
Yeah, I think Leland Sklar's beard doesn't have one piece of gray in it, if I remember seeing right, which doesn't sound possible.
Yeah, a friend of mine saw him on something recently. Oh, it was the Carole King James Taylor show from the Troubadour. She said, "Who's that?" And I said, "Oh, that's Leland Sklar." And she was like, "Who?" I said, "Leland Sklar." He's a bass player. And Russ Kunkel was drums. And of course, Russ Kunkel's the complete Mr. Clean, skinhead now. And so I showed her pictures of them from that era when they were all both really hairy and young. So I started experimenting with that. And I think one of the very first things I ever came up with was that wasn't somebody else's tune. And when I was beginning to fingerpick was the progression that eventually evolved into my song Seven Pistols. So I had had that floating around for years before I knew what I wanted the song to be about, but I never, it took me years and years and years to actually really codify the lyrics and all that. And I just had fun playing around with it. I used to try to play with slide back in those days. I kind of gave that up, which I regret, but I was using open D to basically, play slide licks with, which is another reason a lot of people use them. Dwayne Allman always had would always have a Les Paul in open E and another one in open G, to play his slide stuff, but then would also, play in standard tuning when he wasn't playing slide. And there is a difference. Open tunings are much easier. They're very modal, so you have to really... You just live with how good they sound, or you have to be quite dexterous to be able to play more complicated things in open tunings as opposed to alternate tunings. And one of the best people, I think, that I've ever encountered at that is Howard Emerson. Howie cross tunes, and what that means is you're playing an open D, but you play in a different key. So you play, he'll play in the fifth or he'll play whatever the key is. Which doesn't matter to people who don't play music, but to guitarists, it's kind of it's a merit badge to be able to cross tune. He cross tunes and primarily in open tunings. And so you get very cool sounds that are, more interesting than just playing around the major scale of whatever tuning you're in, or minor scale. But perhaps we should go mention somebody else that has already come up once, but in conjunction with Jackson Browne. Do you remember why Jackson Browne started doing that? Do you remember whose sofa he used to like go hang out on when he was an unknown?
How many guesses do I get? I want to say Ry Cooter or David Lindley, but I might be wrong.
Well, David Crosby. David Crosby and Jackson Browne would go hang out in Laurel Canyon with those guys. So, and David Crosby was, you know, king of open and alternate tunings. And so, he turned zillions of people on to that, including Michael Hedges, who experimented with some with it, but Hedges got the, you know, Hedges worshipped David Crosby and actually made it big because he ran into Crosby in a parking lot. I think maybe Crosby and Nash, and said, "Would you mind if I played you something?" You know, and completely blew him away and, you know, and opened an awful lot of doors for him. But a lot of that stuff goes back to the Cross as being the sort of the Pied Piper of open tunings. Certainly not alone, though. But
I can't let you say that part without chiming in and saying how desperate I was to try to learn like Guinevere or some of his other stuff when I first got my D45 back at Christmas of 2022. I couldn't put that guitar in a regular tuning for months. I was so tunnel vision of like, get Guinevere, you know, get, what was the other one? Deja Vu and In My Dreams from the CSN album. And that guitar, it's a sin. I had to put it back to standard tuning because I want to play it all the time. And I don't know those two songs well enough to, frankly, I don't want to devote that guitar to that tuning. And then it suffers for when I want to play an open, a regular standard tuning song, I don't get to play my D45, so I probably need another one for the open tunings and my regular D45 for the standard stuff. But yeah, I really fell in love with the idea of getting good at Guinevere.
I can hear your wife in the background saying, "Nice try."
You know, we had a really funny talk this past December in the kitchen really quickly. It was over as soon as it started. I said, "Yeah, my friends are kind of like wondering, how do you follow that up?" And she gave me this look like, "Don't even start."
Well, yeah, some people are lucky enough to have multiple D45s so they can do that, and Crosby was certainly one of them. And back when I had a lot of guitars, I definitely had guitars that were, you know, dedicated to Dadgad and Open D and stuff. And because I used to use the mixed set of strings, and there are many makers who make that, put them out this way, but I always like to play the Martin Marquis 8020s and with the silk wrappings, and they don't do that, so I would always have to buy a medium set and a light set, and then you put the so the three strings that you drop down for Dadgad, the two E's and the B, are mediums, and those other three that you don't drop down stay lights. And a lot of people do that. In fact, there's a variety of string makers, you know, in the UK that sell that, because Dadgad is a much more common tuning over there for the Celtic music scene. And people don't know it's called Dadgad because that's what the tuning spells, D-A-D-G-A-D. And speaking of cross-tuning, I had mentioned Howie Emerson, but one of the true kings of cross-tuning is Lawrence Juber. Because he will cross-tune from not open tunings, but from alternate tunings. And, for instance, his version of Strawberry Fields Forever that I learned to do a long time ago when I was trying to rehabilitate my tendonitis and stuff, is in Dadgad, but it's in B-flat. So it's completely, it's completely cross-tuned in the sense that it's actually in B-flat. He arranged it in A and B flat and decided to do it in B flat, but he did it. You know, he could do it and started doing it initially in standard tuning, but you just don't get the gravitas of the bass notes and stuff, and that goes back to why do people do this, and he doesn't remember this, and he was completely denied this but I had long before I ever knew him, I had read an interview with him that itself was really, really old, back in his big hair day, straight out from Wings and that stuff, and when he was just first starting to put out albums, and he clearly said that he didn't use open tunings, and you know, so that he was playing in standard tunings, and then he, you know, and he literally does not remember ever, you know, saying that, but because he's been using open tunings for a very long time, but yeah, it is. So he used to joke about, you know, putting out a book called because you can't do that in standard tuning, and you know, a book of like, you know, alternate tuning, you know, tunings and you know, tunes that he composes or transpose, you know, or arranges in. And, you know, I remember being in a guitar store in another city, and the owner was rather snidely said, you know, you know why they call this genius tunings? Because it makes everybody sound like a genius, you know? And here's clearly somebody that doesn't want to, you know, bother with open tunings. And I said, you know, it's a tool like anything else. And then I played Strawberry Fields and he shut up. but yeah, so there's the possibilities really are endless, and so they're definitely fun to experiment with. They're fun to learn songs, the, you know, if you want to learn the song the way the artist really did it. And like you said, sometimes you can do that in standard tuning, but there's no reason to reinvent the wheel when it's usually much easier to change the tuning of the guitar to play the song to make it sound like the artist played it.
Yeah, because you really can't get certain voicings any other way. And it's funny, you just made me remember, Tim and I have been playing We Just Disagree for years in just doing a drop D. Like we kind of liked the song enough to say, I think I know how that goes. And we played it once and it was fun, so we stopped devoting any attention to it, and we just sort of play it when we want to play it. And we played it again at Platz's maybe a year ago, and the next time we were there, a friend of ours sat in and said, you guys know that song? I said, oh, of course, you can play my guitar. He said, do you mind if I tune it? I said, sure. And I thought he meant, you know, am I out of tune? Does it sound that bad? He tuned it to open E and started playing it. We're like, oh, that's how it sounds. And we're looking around, and the manager were like, now these guys that own the restaurant know what this song is supposed to sound like. Now we can't go back and do the lazy drop D, half-ass, whatever version. But it was, I don't know if you're guilty of this, and anybody listening, if you can relate, do you sort of learn a song from memory and get, whether it's lazy or just complacent, and you just, since it sounds okay, you just play it, and then you hear the real version a long time after, it's such an eye-opener. Oh, my God.
Oh,
it's like the angels sing, you know?
Circle back to Something Fine, because I say that exactly happened to me. You reminded me of what it can sound like, and then I actually went back to the original recording and realized I never actually learned the real intro, and I never really learned, and now I actually do, and it's actually a lot of fun to play, and you know, I just never got around to doing it. And yeah, you can totally get away with that kind of thing where you're it's good enough, because it's for most people listening, it's about the lyrics and the melody. It's not, you know, much less about that. But Tony Phillips has been We Just Disagree in the open tuning, you know, forever. And he, though I think he uses the capo, I don't think, like most people don't tune their guitar to open E because it puts some strain on the neck. And most people keep it in open D and then use a capo. And that's what I do when I play Little Martha. I put it in open D, and then I just put a capo on it. And I often will play it in E flat just because it's a little easier up the neck. But that's a very fun song to play. And again, it doesn't matter. I've had people say, that's not exactly how they do it. It's like, I don't care about that. I learned a bunch of Leo Kottke stuff when I was younger, when I was really trying to learn how to finger pick. And all from one tune that he did that was in drop D that was in a guitar magazine. So I had the tablature. So, you know, so I went out and they kind of reintroduced me to him. So we're talking 1990 probably. And then I, you know, started doing more of his stuff. And he was one of the people, he said he totally regrets using open tuning because it's all right there on the fingerboard, but he knew there's certain tunes that he wrote that are popular that he's expected to do. And I've heard a lot of jazz guys that, you know, snobbly talk about open tunings or capos for that matter, but you know, as if it's a, you know, it's looked down on to use a capo, and you can do anything without a capo. And it's like, no, you can't. You can't do a chord voicing that has this not and have the real same chord voicings. You know, you can't be playing a note here and seven frets away. You know, I mean, all that kind of stuff. It's just not true. But I guess their point is that you can find inversions that do the same thing, and you know, and they just consider it lazy to not, you know, figure out your chord voicings. And, you know, and not everybody can have a six fret stretch, you know. When Lawrence plays Strawberry Fields, he, with his first finger and his pinky, he basically can play the first and fifth fret without him thinking about it, all the way down there. I can't do that. I have to literally like leap around like a gymnast to do it, you know, to do what he does. But open tunings can make things much easier or even possible. But it also does help if you can do an awful lot with, if you're an artist and you're very good at playing the guitar, not only can you do interesting things with open tunings, but you can do really, you know, incredible things. Let's jump to another. Go ahead and come up with another, like a famous song that people might not realize is in open tuning.
I'll do a song. People might not know how weird the tuning is. Maybe you don't know what's open tuning, and I bet you don't know what it is. Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, when our buddy Max showed it to us, and I'm sure you saw the tuning before he showed it to me. If I remember correctly, that's E-E-E-E-B-E. Is that right?
That sounds right. And there is actually, the interesting thing is that Stephen Stills didn't come up with that tuning. Somebody else showed it to him. And I can't remember who that is, but there's actually a name for it. And it's used to, I think, be named after the guy who came up with it. But I can't remember who that is right now.
Is it Bruce Palmer?
Yeah, it's Bruce Palmer. It's Palmer tuning. That's exactly what it is. Good call.
Thank you.
Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. I think a lot of people are aware of that. If you've ever seen him play it, you realize it's an open tuning because he, you know, barely fingers the chords to get those chords. But I will point out...
By the way, Tim and I play that in drop D, too.
Oh, do you really? Yeah, I've seen that, too. I used to have a little band when I was in college that would do it in drop D just because it's... Again, it's mainly about the lyrics and the harmonies and the vocal harmonies and all that. How about Kashmir from Led Zeppelin? That's an open-tuning tune.
Okay.
And what's the other one?
The Rain Song?
Rain Song, thank you. Well, that's even more famous. I think a lot of people know that is in open tuning.
Well, but, Running on Empty. Did you know that was open A? I thought that was just standard.
No, I never did because I had never tried to play it. And any time I ever saw him, I wasn't close enough to the stage to notice that. And I think I finally noticed it once that stuff started showing up on YouTube. Those videos of them in that tour live and stuff, and realizing, you know, that at times he was just using a single bar. That's easier to do when you're in a band situation where other people can handle the bass runs and other people can, you know, fill out certain things and on keyboards or whatnot. That makes it easier to do that. There's definitely other Jimmy Page tunes that are in open tuning. You already mentioned Steve Howe. I'm trying to think of other people from that era that were using open tunings other than people playing with slide. And of course, one of the true, you know, mavens of open and alternate tunings is Joni Mitchell. You know, she probably has more songs than I think Big Yellow Taxi is probably an open D, but I think she, you know, she uses all kinds of tunings and likes to experiment with them and probably has more tunes not in standard tuning than she does in standard tuning.
How many people listening to this thought we should have led the whole thing and we buried the lead not talking about Joni Mitchell for half an hour? She's probably the first person I think of when you talk about alternate tunings, really.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. But, I mean, there's there is, and I think it became more common. John Mayer's song Daughters is in probably open D. I don't think it's in open E or open D. There's, what else? I mean, they're out there. But like I said, just songs that, you know, but doesn't occur to people. Taylor Swift has written songs in open D. You know, it's, you know, it's not unusual. Though I don't think it's not unusual is in an open tuning, frankly, just to put that on the record.
Thanks for saying what I was thinking.
But you could. I'm sure you could work up a very interesting arrangement.
All right. Say some other title so I get that out of my head.
Let's see. Well, you already mentioned In My Dreams, which is one of my favorite, all-time favorite songs. And Crosby, you know, it's so difficult to play that tune and make it sound really good because it's really hard to have the intonation of your guitar. It's got to be really good. Because he's up and down the neck, you know, and it's real easy with open tunings. You really notice when the intonation throws things out of tune because there's so many unisons going on or, you know, that it can sound pretty atrocious if you don't get the tuning really well, really good. I learned Guinevere a zillion years ago just to learn it, but I never been able to sing it, and so I just... It was just wasted on me. So it was fun to play, but I was never able to really sing it. But I know a lot of people certainly loved at the old Martin Fest when Mark Stallworth would bring his 1968 D45, or 69 maybe it was, but yeah, that famously used to belong to the late David Soul. And, you know, he would put it in that tuning.
That's right.
And just, you know, and boy, it sounded awesome.
Was that Hutch? Or Starsky?
I must confess, I do not remember. I didn't actually watch the show very often, so.
I remember the car.
But, yeah, I remember the car. Not as much as I remember Knight Rider, but I remember the car. Don't hassle the Hoff.
Well, before I go into anything that makes that into a tangent, there is one more, at least one more genre that I want to talk about, and it's going to be a nice segue into a good friend of ours, somebody we both know and get along with very well. What can you talk about Celtic music, and do you know which person I'm thinking of?
Let me see. I'm hearing, I think his name begins with L, but not the letter L.
That's right. L. McMean and the... How would you categorize that? Is it drop C? It's something with a C bass. I know that.
I call it, some people call it Celtic C. I know it's got more than one name, but it's basically you take dadgad and then you drop the two bass strings down another step. So it's C and G at the bottom. Well, yeah, C and G at the bottom rather than D and A. And, you know, I've experimented with that. I have some compositions that use that for, though that none of them ended up on my album. But it's a lot of fun. Again, you've got to have the guitar tuned really well, and you've got to be careful because those, if you're using light gauge strings, they can get really slappy when you get down into a C. But unlike a lot of other artists, he basically uses that tuning exclusively. So he does everything in that tuning. He does all of his old Irish and Scottish fiddle tunes. He will arrange his modern, you know, Motown tunes, you know, and so forth, all in that tuning.
Yeah.
And which is really cool. It's really cool to watch him play this stuff, frankly.
He's so great.
But yeah, it is. Yeah. And that and dadgad are used a lot over there. But some of the open tunings. Van Morrison, you know, comes from that background, and he, Into the Mystic, it was recorded in open D, I'm almost certain, I don't know. Which is, you know, one of the great tunes. And Paul, I can't believe I can't think of his last. I'll get scorched for this, too.
Simon?
One of the No, one of the godfathers of Irish music, Paul. Oh, come on. What is his name? But anyway, he was one of the, not now they're old, but back when they were young in the 60s, helped popularize Dadgad. What on earth is his name? Hold on a second. Let me get over to my little aquarium here and look up Paul and Arthur McBride. Arthur McBride. Ouch. Paul Brady. I can't believe I couldn't remember that. If you've never seen Paul Brady's recording of Arthur McBride from the 70s, check it out. He took this grand old Irish, what's basically a dance or a marching song, really, and something that, fife and drum or pipe bands would play. And it's about a English press gang that would go into places like Wales and Ireland and Cornwall and basically kidnap people and force them into the army, force them into the Navy. And one of these press gangs shows up where Arthur McBride and some of his friends were, spending a nice Christmas day by the seaside. And I won't give it away, but he turns it into this like chillingly great song in Dadgad and actually turns it on his head. So he's really singing. He's got this real high Irish tenor and he's basically singing the harmony of the original tune, and now that's, that's the only way you can do it now. And so, but check him out. I think he's playing a D18 or D28 in the videos. And Paul Brady, Dadgad master. But Paul Simon, on the other hand, has used some alternate tunings, but he also uses Nashville tuning.
Ah, yes.
And Nashville tuning is standard tuning, but for the strings are tuned up an octave. And so it requires special strings. And he usually uses his fancy black Yamaha with all the, pearl inlay when he's in concert, or when he was in concert, when he was touring. That would typically be in Nashville tuning. Again, when you're playing with a band, you can get away with that and have this high, very high singing guitar sound because you got other people to take care of the lower end sound from the band.
Yeah.
And somebody else, David Gilmour has used Nashville tuning.
Oh.
And on The Wall, it's definitely on one of the tunes in The Wall. I can't remember which tune it is now, but he uses Nashville tuning. So we went from Celtic to Nashville, and everybody knows that bluegrass was originally based on Celtic music. So it all comes around in the end.
Want to hear a quick anecdote that makes no sense to this show?
Sure.
Carolyn and I, my sister Carolyn and I, we were on vacation, 10 years ago, and we tried to get the DJ to let us sing Vera by Pink Floyd, as if they're going to have the song Vera in the catalog at open mic. They're like, what? At karaoke. do you have Vera? It's like,
I love that.
9 seconds.
That. That's a very poignant song. I said pungent song. That's a very pungent song.
No, we didn't sing it. No.
It's too bad. But no, you guys, it would have been a pungent song. But when Roger Waters sings it, it's a poignant song.
Back on track in 3, 2.
yes. But yes, well, there you go. That was a tangent off of Pink Floyd, which came from Nashville tuning, which came from Paul Simon, which came from Paul Brady, which came from Al McMean. So all
I'm
related.
I'm impressed. You reversed those breadcrumbs very, very well. And if anybody out there is still listening, please let us know if you're watching the YouTube version of this. What do you think of? Which song do you think of when you talk about open tuning, alternate tuning? Which artist do you immediately go to? Are we burned at the stake for waiting a half hour to talk about Joni Mitchell? And there's got to be somebody we haven't talked about yet that you guys can please let us know. And if you're not watching this, but you're driving in the car listening to the podcast, you could always email us, support@mauriesmusic.com, and we would love to hear from you. These shows are always a lot of fun, but inevitably we forget something, some detail escapes us. I was going to say David Wilcox, too, when you mentioned our friend Tony Phillips. my mind, when you were talking about his version of We Just Disagree, which is really stunning, the humorous part of my brain also went to immediate memory of him playing a song called, what's it, with the gun?
Blow Him Away?
Blown Away. Is that David Wilcox?
Oh, now you got me confused. I think it is. I do believe
but
it is.
But it's, yeah. It's an Open E song that's, so. it's a laugh riot, really. But
it's about you know, road rage, but not real road rage. It's about the you know, people sitting in their cars having violent fantasies about the morons that are really ticking them off. But anyway,
but that's a really cool Open E song that
indeed.
You can laugh about.
Yes, that's very very good, very good. Which you know. Which is somewhat strange since Open E is used for blues a lot, and blues, you know, usually aren't that happy. You know, except Deep River Blues is kind of a funny song, but but yeah, a lot of blues players use open tunings. And some of that came from the slide and the fact that a lot of the poor people down south, and often African American, in the previous century and the second half of the century before that, would often have guitars that were pretty poorly cared for and had warped necks and very high strings. And so they started what became the tradition of slide playing, using bone or you know, anything that they get their hands on. Famously, Corseden bottles, of course, were much beloved as slides. And then also, you know, when you're playing in an open tuning, it's almost like playing an auto harp, where you only need a finger or two to be able to make a chord and change your chords around, or a bar. And same thing with slack key guitar, you know, from Hawaii, which relies on very loose strings to get the sound that they get out of it. But again, same idea, primarily in an open tuning. And so you basically are getting a whole chord just by putting the slide across, you know, one fret. And then alternate tunings, you know, you can do similar things with that, a little more difficult. On my album, Lost in Haunted Ways, there are, you know, I do stuff in, I have stuff in standard tuning, drop D, dadgad, and then I have a tuning that I just came up with. I have a tune called Ibex and Black Stock Road that is like dadgad, but it has the A drop down to G. So it's like Celtic C, but it keeps the bass D on it.
Oh.
And which has a different, you know, again, the harmonics just sounds, you know, surprisingly different from dadgad just by having that one change, and you know taking advantage of that in terms of the bass and mid range of the tuning. So, you know, I'm a big believer in people doing that kind of experimentation and coming up with something that you like. And you wanted to mention capos and partial capos, and that's exactly what that's all about, is taking apart. You know, take a partial capo. There's different kinds. There's one that's a drop D capo that allows you to just put a capo on and have on the second fret and have drop E, but you can play around with those, put them upside down. And then there's the partial capo that just frets the interior three, you know, the interior three strings. And again, you can put it on there so you're playing an A chord without touching the guitar, or you can turn it around. And then you're playing whatever that chord would be, which is a some sort of E minor-y thing, and then start moving them up and down the neck until you find something you like. Have you done that ever? Have you played around with those?
Not more than just for a few minutes, but you can pull a Tony Pasciotta and put three of them on your guitar. And we would often joke at NASFest, you know, where he's like, "Do you get any more of those capos in that?" And he would describe it, and I swear, it's like a jigsaw puzzle on the. And credit to him. I mean, I was going to almost make a trivia question out of it. Can you play alternate tunings without tuning the tuning pegs? And that's exactly what he does. So take your example from a minute ago. Put that capo on where it just frets the three strings that you would bar on the second fret to make an A chord. he'd probably put that on the fifth fret. He would get one of the other capos, not something that covers all six, but he'd put that somewhere on the second fret, and he would have a combination of one or two open strings, two strings are fretted at two, two or three strings are fretted at five, and just a real fast example, and I'm not sure what that would sound like, but he'll take that idea, and then he'll actually have to figure out, back what we talked about at the beginning of the program, chord voicings, whatever you thought C major would be on a regular guitar with no capos, no strange tuning. Now find that where you have what I just described as your pedal and your the other harmonies that are happening. I would have to think finding where to put those capos on the neck is just the first 10 minutes of an hour-long process of now, what do you fret? And when I see some of the stuff he puts on YouTube and Facebook, it really lets the guitar do almost everything. He might get a lot of chords out of placing one finger in one spot and moving it, and he played things that would normally take, you know, four of your fingers. But I won't say that it's so fun that I've gone and done it myself, but when I watch him do it, I sort of become inspired, so that I probably should. It looks pretty fun.
Don't try this at home, kids. We need to say that the opinions of Maury Rutsch are his alone and not to be construed as anything that Tony would recommend where it came to the descriptions of where Maury was suggesting you put your partial capos. But yes, you're actually right. And sometimes when you do that, our friend Ed Madonio does that as well. He got into doing the exact same thing. He's composed pieces using multiple capos, partial capos, and he's arranged a really beautiful accompaniment for known songs. And he likes to play very pretty love songs by Christopher Cross and people like that. And he's taken advantage of the partial capo idea to the point of he alters his capos. He will actually cut capos. And I know somebody's probably going to put this in the text of the YouTube version of this. There's more than one famous artist out there, and their names are escaping me, that's their main thing, is multiple capos. And sometimes taking a capo or partial capo and cutting out the stuff so that certain strings go through
really?
unchanged. And to make all kinds of alternate tunings. And I know Ed has at least one song where he's got a capo and a partial capo and maybe two partial capos. And sometimes he's fretting the strings below the capos.
Oh, really?
And sometimes he's up above them. And yeah. And it's it's fascinating to watch. But yes, it takes a great deal of, obviously, patience and exploration and the love of coming up with a very, very beautiful tone and sounds, you know, that are out of the ordinary. And as Lawrence used to, you know, quipped that one time, you know, naming the book, because you can't do that in open and standard tuning. And that's, you know, really what's behind all this. It's stuff you can't do in standard tuning, but sounds, you know, the sound is worth it for people like Tony and Ed. So,
I wonder if there are like 20 examples of ways to use partial capos.
I'm sure there are, but I have no, I'm not going to try to venture guessing, guessing them all.
Would you like to play 20 questions with me?
I would like to play 20 questions so long as they're not related to partial capos.
Ah.
Now, for people who have never heard this section of our show before, I get 20 questions to try to figure out the guitar that Maury is thinking of. It's got to be a Martin guitar, and it's got to be still available out there in the world today for sale. So in other words, he can't come up with something that was, you know, retired in 1962 or something like that.
And brand new to the program, I'm not sure if you guys have seen on Instagram or YouTube, I finally got the great idea. I'm cornering Martin employees at work, and I'm asking them to play a game just like this. But we call it half a game of 20 questions because they're busy. So instead of, like today's program, it can be a guitar made in Navajo in Mexico or the Factory of Nazareth. The on-the-road version of this game is just a run-and-gun. It's 10 questions because it's built only in Nazareth, and it's been a lot of fun. We've put a couple of episodes up already, so if you have an opportunity, find us on Instagram and Facebook, and you get to see some of the people that build these instruments, how smart they really are. It's been a lot of fun, but it's Spoon's turn right now. We got 20 questions on the clock, and go.
Is this guitar made in Nazareth, Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Is this guitar made with the dreadnought body shape?
No.
Is this a short scale instrument?
No.
Is this guitar the GPC Inception Maple?
No, but why would you try that again?
Well, you had to look it up, so obviously not a model you're that familiar with.
Ah, but if you remember last week, red herring, red herring.
Is this guitar in the Modern Deluxe series?
No.
Is this guitar in a series?
Yes. I'll give you that back. That they all are.
Well, I mean, limited edition, special edition aren't a series. That's what I'm saying.
But it's in a series, but not one you just said, but it's in a series.
Does this guitar have a cutaway?
No.
Does this guitar have an Adirondack spruce top?
No.
Okay, wow. My radar is not really working today. So, is this guitar stocked as an acoustic electric instrument?
No.
Does this guitar have a spruce top?
No. That's 10 questions.
Does this guitar have 14 frets free from the body?
No.
Is this guitar a 0015M?
No. That's a 14 fret instrument.
Oh, SM, sorry. Is this guitar the 0015SM?
Yes, it is. The 0015SM. I could have got you. We talked maybe not 3 or 4 episodes ago where the nomenclature for this might eventually change to 0012-15M. And I thought I might have a technicality where the 0015SM does and doesn't exist at the same time, but I wasn't going to go in that direction. Why don't you talk a little bit about this guitar that you just won?
Well, I think, I wish, I think they'll probably be for sale out there even after they change the models. What Mari's referring to is the fact that Martin at least has threatened to change the stamps and model names of 12-fret guitars to say 0012 or 0012 dash, then the style number and M. M being a holdover from when they weren't always made from mahogany, I guess, but the M stands for mahogany. And just like your OM28VR, you have an OM28VR, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah, which they are standing for Rosewood. Okay, so this is a holdout. It's been around for a long time. It's been changed here and there, but it's a 12-fret 0000 long-scale guitar, as all 12-fret 0000s were in the old days. And it is got mahogany backsides and top. These days, that can mean tropical American mahogany. It can mean one sort of African mahogany like Sipo or even Sapele, based on availability. But it's my understanding that they're mainly Sipo these days, which is, I think, sonically very similar to American mahogany and may even have better bass response. But you certainly get a better bass response out of a 12-fret body than you do out of a 14-fret body. These have nice old-timey fingerboard, you know, diamond fingerboards, even though you would certainly have never seen on an all-mahogany model back in the 30s that way. But so they look nice, open-back tuners. These are now made with ebony board and bridge. In the past, they've been made with other woods for the board and bridge. But yeah, very exceptionally comfortable. 1 3/4 inch nut, unlike the old 1 7/8 inch nuts you would have gotten on a guitar like this in the old days. So comfortable to play, really great finger picker, wonderful sustain from a mahogany top for slide. When I say sustain, I'm talking about the fundamental note sustain, not so much of the dying off of the body resonance and stuff. But but that gets better and better and better as that hardwood top breaks in over time. And Martin just keeps making them because people keep buying them. And check it out, the 00015SM. Soon to be named 00012-15M, apparently.
Not a bad choice for alternate tunings, too.
Oh, yeah, very good point. Very good point. Yeah, they would sound particularly good in like something with where you drop that bass string down to a D or a C. Very good point. Because that long scale gives you a little extra string tension so you can get away with a low C. So I won it, did I? So you can send it to P.O. Box.
P.O. Box, good luck. See if it ever shows up. Boulevard.
Yeah, that happened to me. I fell for one of those scams where I saw something advertised too good to be true on Facebook. It was a like a hoodie sweatshirt, but in the form of a football jersey.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, that's a really good price. So I bought one. And then I got an email saying, oh, we're sorry, your order was canceled. You'll have to, but it's in the mail, so you'll just have to pay for it again. And I was like, what? So I've been waiting now for about 4 months to arrive so I can pay for it again.
Oh, boy. 6 to 8 weeks later, right?
They only wrote me twice about that, about making sure my order was canceled, so my credit card payment was canceled, so I needed to do it again, but the product was in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably be waiting for this 12-fret mahogany triple O for quite a while.
Well, not only that, but if you're one of those folks that are just about on the fence, should I sign up for the Patreon? Should I get backstage access? Should I get to see the video version, the uncut video version of this podcast? If Spoon wears that sweatshirt on this program and you don't sign up, you're going to miss it.
Yes, indeed. I'm not wearing my Martin sweatshirt today. This was a hand-me-down from a roommate who worked at a charter school in New York City for about 2 days and got a bunch of swag. So I got this wonderfully warm, it's almost like a mountain climber sweater, but a rock climber sweater. But yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's chilly here in Brooklyn today. It's like classically winter.
Like that Mitch Hedberg joke, once I was a hot tar roofer. I hated that day.
I've had jobs like that. I don't think I've ever had a one-day job, but I was working at a burger chef when I was in graduate school. That did not last very long, I can tell you.
Well, one of these days we'll have to do 20 questions about our old jobs and see what we can't learn about each other. Spoon, I think it's about time. I hear the music in the distance. It might be almost time to wrap this one up. What did we forget to talk about? Maybe more importantly, those of you listening, what did we forget to talk about when it comes to open tunings, alternate tunings, and yes, partial capos?
Well, I'll just say I forgot to mention Open G, which I've written tunes in as well. You guys should check that one out. I think that's a lot of fun to play in as well. And I look forward to seeing what people have to say about all these tunings and what tunings they would like me to try. So get on the YouTube version of this and pipe up or send us an email. And thanks for listening, as usual.
I want to thank all of our patrons for everything behind the scenes. I want to thank everyone for all your support. From all of us at Martins & More, thanks for listening.
Hear you later.